In a moment, Cade was back in the saloon, holding both guns.
God damn.
He don't say a hell of a lot, but it don't do to rile him, does it?
Cade stood there for a long moment. Of all the patrons in the saloon, he, more than anyone, knew that it wasn't over. It wasn't a coincidence that Ned Appling was in that saloon tonight. He was sent there to call Cade out, and he would be back. Dick Sullivan moved up beside Cade.
I think maybe it'd be best if you called it a night. And maybe you better use the back door.
Yes, sir. I expect you're right.
He could appreciate the fear the saloon owner had of the beaten man coming back to look for Cade and shooting up his saloon. He turned to find Red standing behind him.
It's all right, Red. I was thinking about going back to the bunkhouse anyway. I'll see you later.
He laid Ned Appling's pistol on the bar and left. Outside, Cade stood at the back door of the saloon for a few minutes, allowing his eyes to adjust to the dark. He listened for any unusual sound. Looking left and right in the narrow alley that ran between the buildings and the creek behind him, he could see no sign of anyone lying in wait. Sensing no immediate danger, he started walking back to the ranch. Glancing briefly down the side alley between the saloon and the dry goods store and seeing no one, he passed behind the store and walked out to the street on the other side. Pausing again to scan the main thoroughfare, he saw nothing but a few horses tied out front of the saloon. The street was empty all the way down to the south end where the Montana Territorial Prison stood. It occurred to him then the irony of a planned assassination in the very shadow of the prison. He wondered if the man who had come to kill him had ever been a guest at that notorious institution. He told himself as he walked along the dark road that he could have jumped to the wrong conclusion regarding the incident at the bar. Now, why would a man of John Slater's obvious wealth and apparent standing hire a common gunman to eliminate a rival suitor? It didn't make sense, especially in light of the fact that Cade was no suitor at all.
Maybe Appling just had a burr under his saddle and felt like a fight.
He remembered then the challenging stare from Appling the first time he had seen him. Thinking about it now, he was surprised he didn't recognize the man right away in the saloon tonight. Still, Appling was Slater's hired hand. Cade couldn't discard the possibility the fight was at Slater's bidding. Jealousy was a disease shared by rich men as well as saddle tramps. He was almost back to the bunkhouse when he heard a horse on the road behind him, coming up quickly. He turned to see if he knew who it was.
Damn!
Instinct saved him from the second shot as he dived into the bushes by the side of the road, rolling over and over when he hit the ground, desperately searching for some form of cover. A low mound was the only reasonable protection he could find at the moment. He crawled behind it, pulling his Colt from the holster, and prepared to return fire. Suddenly taking form in the darkness, horse and rider appeared, bearing down on him with rifle blazing shot after shot that ripped the grass on the mound, pinning him down on his belly. The horse was almost upon him when Cade heard the click of a firing pin on an empty chamber. The attacker drove the horse on, attempting to trample Cade, who rolled away out from under the pounding hooves. As soon as he was free of the danger of being trampled, Cade raised his pistol and pulled the trigger. He missed. Cade scrambled to his feet and ran for the bunkhouse. Cade rounded the corner of the bunkhouse and made for the shed built on the back. Spotting the barrel standing in the corner between the bunkhouse and the shed, he headed straight for it. In almost one continuous motion, he leaped up on the barrel and pulled himself up on the shed roof. There he crouched, his heart pumping in a desperate effort to supply the oxygen his lungs screamed for. The dark horseman rounded the corner of the building. Kneeling on the short roof of the shed, Cade was face to face with the man in the saddle for a brief instant before before he pulled the trigger. The bullet slammed into Ned Appling's chest, knocking him off the horse. Cade leaped to the ground and ran over to where Ned lay face down. Within seconds, Cade was joined by a couple of men from the bunkhouse. One of them was Ralph Duncan. Up at the main house, a lantern appeared on the porch, the family having been awakened by the shots. In a few minutes, Carlton Kramer came down to the bunkhouse to investigate. He got there just as Cade finished telling Duncan what had happened and why there was a dead man lying between his bunkhouse and the barn.
Are you sure that's the same man?
Kramer held his lantern close over the body while Duncan rolled it over.
That's the same man who was with Slater, all right.
Duncan turned to Cade.
Why would he come gunning for you? Have you had a run-in with him before?
Well, not since about a half hour ago in the saloon. He tried to start something with me then. Before that, I haven't had any dealings with the man. Some of the men were there. They can tell you the straight of it.
Oh, hell, man, I believe what you say. I'm just wondering if we ought to even bother Bob Soulsby about it.
I don't see why. Seems to me like Cade here has already handled it.
Well, since the man was one of John Slater's crew, we ought to at least send word to him.
I expect so.
I'm thinking it's up to me to carry his body over to Slater's place, since I'm the one that shot him. I'll tote him over there in the morning.
Well, I suppose that's the thing to do. Turn his horse into the corral and put his body in the barn overnight so the dogs or a stray coyote don't find it.
Returning to the house, Kramer was met at the door by his wife and Elizabeth.
What is it, Carlton? What was the shooting? Is Cade in trouble?
Nothing for you women to worry about. Evidently, a man who works for John Slater made an attempt on Cade's life and Cade shot him. I'm fairly satisfied it was a case of self-defense. I'll know for sure in the morning when I talk to some of the boys who witnessed the trouble.
Cade wouldn't shoot anybody in cold blood.
Kramer paused for a moment while he studied Elizabeth's face.
You know that for a fact, do you?
Well,
there is very little anybody knows about that young man, except he has a knack for handling horses. He just showed up one day from nowhere, heading nowhere. Now, he seems nice enough. I like him, too. But it's about time somebody warned you to be a little more cautious in your choice of friends.
Taken aback, because she never expected a lecture from Carlton Kramer, Elizabeth was speechless for a moment. She looked at Cornelia for support and received nothing more than raised eyebrows, telling her that she agreed with her husband.
Well, I know he wouldn't hurt anybody unless he had a very good reason.
Soon back in her bed under a heavy quilt, Elizabeth couldn't fall asleep right away. Her thoughts were of the quiet, sometimes brooding young man who had so recently ridden into her life, and she questioned the suddenness of her interest in him. She couldn't rationally explain her attraction to him, and too, she couldn't deny it. At times it came to her to lie heavily upon her mind, and she would try for a while to make sense of it. Then, like this night, she would eventually give up trying to solve her weakness for Cade Hunter. He just needed someone to take care of him, she told herself. She finally drifted off to sleep. The solid cloud cover that had moved over the valley and darkened the nights for the past week suddenly became restless. A cold wind swept down from the northwest, stirring the clouds into an unsettled state of agitation, bringing early snow flurries skipping across the Flint Creek Mountains to lightly blanket the prairie grass with silver. Cade saw it as a warning from Old Man Winter that he would be visiting the valley in earnest before long. With Red's help, Cade lifted Ned Appling's body up across the saddle of his horse and tied his hands and feet beneath the horse's belly.
He's already a little stiff. I thought we were going to have to crease him across his behind to bend him, but he ain't board stiff yet.
Red walked around the horse to stand by Cade while he secured a lead rope to his saddle.
Maybe I ought to ride over there with you, you know, just to keep you company. We don't know nothing about that crew of Slaters. I ain't ever run into any of them, to tell you the truth. Folks say he's running cattle into that stretch of land on the other side of Clark Fork, so I expect he's got a crew.
You mean you want to make sure I don't get into any more trouble, right?
Well, you ain't had much luck getting along with any of his men so far.
I expect Duncan would appreciate you helping move those cows in closer to the lower range. I can take care of myself.
Joe Stover and three other men were lolling around a fire in front of a battered old barn when he turned his head to see who was heading their way.
Well, looky coming here.
As one, the others turned to stare in the direction he indicated.
Ain't that Ned's horse that feller's leading?
Bonner got to his feet, trying to get a better look at the stranger slow-walking a mottled gray horse toward him.
Looks like. And I reckon that'd be Ned riding belly down across the saddle.
You'd best go get Mr. Slater. Looks like old Ned got himself in a little trouble last night.
Unaware of the special mission Slater had sent Ned Appling on, the rest of his men had assumed that Ned must have slipped off to go to town the night before. The only speculation among them had been whether or not Ned had quit or had just decided to have a night out for himself. See, Slater had issued strict orders for none of the crew to visit the town, except on the occasion when it was necessary to drive a wagon in for supplies. Joe maintained that the reason was because Slater was new in the valley and he didn't want the good citizens of Deer Lodge to see the rough-looking band of cowhands he had hired. In truth, there was more experience in rustling cattle in Slater's crew of misfits. Like any saddle tramps, they favored the pleasures afforded by the saloons and bawdy houses, but Slater saw to it that there was plenty of whiskey kept at the ranch. Considering the fact that there were no more than a few head of cattle to take care of, there was little reason to complain.
What you waiting for? Go!
Right.
While Joe went to the cabin to alert Slater of the visitor, the others continued to sit and stare at the rider, who was now crossing the tiny stream that trickled down from the hills north of the ranch. With light flurries of snow swirling around him, Cade guided Loco slowly toward the cluster of rough buildings gathered at the foot of a long, rocky ridge. No more than shacks abandoned by the previous owner, they stood in sharp contrast to the sturdy structures of the Bar K. Cade looked at the spread as he rode toward the fire by the barn. Evidently, Slater was slow getting started on building his ranch. There were only a few odd cattle to be seen on the place, and from the looks of the group warming by the fire, it appeared that no one was working. When still 50 yards or so from the men watching him approach, he reached down and pulled his rifle from the scabbard and rested it across his arms, just in case there were others here who, like the late Ned Appling, fancied themselves handy with a gun. No one by the fire moved to meet him as he rode up to about a dozen yards, and no one spoke as they watched him pull Loco to a stop. He scanned the impassive faces for a long moment, wondering if Slater had found the lot of them in the prison at the south end of Deer Lodge's main street. John Slater emerged from the door of the cabin then, followed by another man. Cade untied the lead rope. Wearing a heavy fur coat, Slater stalked angrily across the yard toward Cade. The silent snowflakes seemed to eddy behind him as he strode forth, his long dark hair swaying to and fro under his hat. Slater marched up to stand defiantly before Loco. Cade dropped the lead rope to the ground.
I believe this belongs to you.
His eyes blazing with anger, Slater locked his gaze on Cade.
Joe! Bonner! Get him down from there!
Joe and Bonner immediately stepped forward. They lifted the corpse from the horse and lay it out on the ground. Joe looked at the crusted blood on Ned's vest.
Shot through the chest.
Slater's eyes never left Cade's.
Who shot him?
I shot him.
You got your damn nerve riding in here with his body after murdering him.
Poor old Ned. I know damn well it weren't a fair fight.
Cade gave Joe a scathing glance.
Poor old Ned got a bullet in his chest, not his back. He came looking for trouble and he found it.
That's your story, Hunter. But I say the day ain't come when you can take Ned Appling in a fair fight. By God, I ought to shoot you down right now.
You could try.
You're a damn fool for riding in here like this. Look around you, man. I make it 5-1. Pretty good odds that you ain't gonna make it out of here alive.
The remark caused a perceptible change in the passive stance of Slater's men as they at once realized what their boss was threatening. A couple of them moved in a little closer, their hands dropping to rest on their gun butts.
Maybe.
Cade casually swung the muzzle of his Winchester around to level at Slater.
But I make it dead certain that you're going with me if the first shot is fired.
Realizing that what Cade promised was very much possible, Slater held his hand up to keep his men in check.
Get off my land while you still got the chance, Hunter. You're asking for trouble coming here in the first place. Ned Appling had a lot of friends. They ain't gonna be too happy when they find out Ned was murdered. If I was you, I'd get the hell out of this territory before one of them catches up with you.
Yeah, old Ned's got a lot of friends now that he's dead. How many did the back-shooting son of a bitch have while he was still alive?
He and Slater glowered at each other for a long moment.
I had no quarrel with the man. You sent a paid gunman to call me out. Now suppose you tell me why you sent him after me. There ain't no reason for you to be gunning after me, but if it's got anything to do with the fact that I'm a friend of Elizabeth Walker's, then you're a bigger fool than I thought, and a miserable excuse for a man.
God damn you! If you didn't have that rifle on me, I'd... Get off my land.
A gust of wind swirled the snowflakes and swept Slater's long black hair from his shoulders, for a moment revealing an ear, with the very tip of it missing. The shock slammed Cade's entire system like chain lightning.
Lem Snyder.
In the span of one jarring instant, it suddenly hit him why something about Slater's looks had troubled him from the beginning. The man's appearance had fooled him, the long hair and the absence of the bushy beard. But the clipped ear was no coincidence. The look on Snyder's face when his name was called verified it. He was the man who had murdered Luke Tucker, and that explained why he wanted Cade dead. Snyder must have recognized him as the man he had left in the river for dead. Though only a few seconds passed while Cade was rendered incapacitated by the face-to-face encounter with the man he had vowed to kill, it was enough time to encourage Joe Stover to act. Seeing Cade's rifle waver slightly, Stover reached for his revolver. Catching the movement out of the corner of his eye, Cade's reflexes came to his aid. He whipped the Winchester around and cut Stover down before his pistol cleared the holster. When Cade was forced to turn and deal with Stover, Snyder dived inside the barn door behind him while everyone else scattered for what cover they could find, scrambling to draw their guns in the process. Bonner was able to get his pistol and get off one shot that passed under Loco's neck, causing the horse to bolt and Cade to hang on. Another shot from the barn barely missed Cade's head as his horse took off in a gallop. Realizing the horse had more sense than he did at this explosive moment, Cade lay low on Loco's neck and retreated under a hail of gunfire. As he bolted across the tiny stream and raced across the prairie grass, now white with the frosting of snow, he looked behind him to see one of the men jump on Ned Appling's horse, it being the only one saddled, and give chase. Looking for the right spot to wait for him, Cade picked a low swale in the prairie. Though it offered little cover, he nevertheless pulled Loco to a sliding stop and leaped from the saddle. Landing hard, he cocked the Winchester as he knelt on one knee aiming at the pursuing rider, and he waited for the shot. Ignoring the wild pistol shots that creased the snow on either side of him, he continued to wait until the rider was within 100 yards. Then, without haste, he pulled the trigger. The bullet knocked the man from the saddle. Safe for the moment, he had time to think about what to do. His brain was still reeling with the shock of finding Lem Snyder right under his nose, and he had not been prepared for the confrontation. Had he known, he would have, without hesitation, shot that murdering son of a bitch as soon as he stomped out of the cabin. Like flashes of lightning, past images raced through his mind. He thought about the morning when Snyder arrived suddenly with an offer to escort Elizabeth to Deer Lodge. There was something about the man that triggered a sour feeling in his gut right from the start. He should have paid more attention to what his instinct was telling him. And later, he should have known that jealousy was not the sole motive for sending a killer to challenge him. The more he thought about it, the more obvious John Slater was. According to what he had been told when he came to work at the Bar K, no one really knew about Slater. Newly rich, it was said he had acquired a fortune as a miner. No one had the means to thoroughly check his story out, though, even if anyone had cared enough to do so. Cade thought then about Luke Tucker's blood-encrusted body pumped full of holes, the source of Slater's wealth, and he felt the fire burning in his veins anew. The sensation was followed at once by the sickening thought of Lem Snyder calling on Elizabeth Walker. One thing he knew then to be a fact, if nothing else, was that Lem Snyder was a dead man. It was time to slow down his racing brain and think coolly about his course of action to rid the world of the evil presence of this wanton killer. He thought about the location of Snyder's ranch buildings underneath the brow of the rocky ridge. That would be the best approach from the ridge above the ranch. There was no more time for planning the assassination, however, for some motion on the prairie caught his attention at that point. He looked out beyond the horse with the empty saddle, now standing motionless about 50 yards away from the body lying in the light cover in the snow. Three riders bore down on him, not sparing the horses. After a short ride, they came upon Ned Appling's horse standing idly near a clump of sage.
Yonder!
Jim Biner pointed to a body lying in the snow-covered grass. The sight of Pete Johnson's corpse only served to further infuriate Lem Snyder.
Get after this son of a bitch! I want him dead!
Galloping past the body, they suddenly were forced to pull up short when a series of rifle shots singed the air around them.
Shit!
No one was hit, but it was enough to cause them to draw back out of range until they spotted Cade at the foot of a narrow ravine that led back up the mountain behind them. Satisfied that they had at least caught him before he could get back to the Bar K, Snyder calmed his rage enough to think about the situation.
All right, it's going to be hard to get a shot at him where he's holed up.
He thought about the man he'd already left for dead once.
What's that, boss?
Nothing.
His rage under control at last, Snyder looked at the two men awaiting his orders. It was a manhunt now, and the odds were in his favor. Looking over the terrain that separated the three of them from their lone adversary, he concluded that to charge the ravine where Cade was holed up would amount to nothing less than suicide.
All right. He thinks he's in a good spot to sit tight and pick us off when we try to rush him. But he ain't got no way out of that hole if we keep him pinned down. Now, Bob, you're a better shot with that rifle than either one of us. So you see if you can't get up a little closer. Maybe over there.
He pointed to a rise in the prairie about 100 yards ahead.
You make sure that he stays in that ravine. Me and Bonner will work up behind him on that mountain and flush him out of his hole. One of us is bound to get a shot at him.
Bob hesitated for a moment, looking out across the open expanse of grass between where they stood now and the slight rise in the prairie floor.
That ain't much cover, even if I do get across that open space.
Bob glanced up to meet Snyder's smoldering gaze.
I reckon I can make it, though.
You can make it. Hell, you'll still be just barely in range of that Winchester he's using. Now get going, damn it, I ain't got all day.
The bullet thudded into the ground a few feet short of the edge of the ravine, but Cade chose not to return fire. He had seen one of Snyder's men driving his horse hard to reach a low rise in the prairie, dismount, scramble for cover. Cade had not bothered to shoot at him, knowing the range was too great to expect any success, and he was mindful of the number of cartridges he had left. He couldn't afford to be wasteful. A long-range shootout would soon deplete his ammunition. Seeing that only one of the three had advanced to the position behind the rise, it was not difficult for him to determine the strategy they had decided upon. He turned to look at the steep mountainside behind him, a thick maze of trees and rocks. He decided right away that if the roles were reversed, he would definitely pick the high ground. The thought caused him to question his initial wisdom in picking the spot in which he found himself. He squinted out along the base of the ridge, trying to see if he could spot the other two riders, but they had evidently disappeared behind the point of the ridge directly behind him. It was a question now as to how long it would take him to get to a killing position above him. He decided that his best chance was to find another spot to take on the three of them. Crawling back from the rim, he got to his feet and went to the bottom of the ravine to get his horse. Stepping up in the saddle, he gave Loco his heels, and the big horse sprang into action. Up over the edge of the ravine, he bolted, hooves pounding the ground beneath the light covering of snow. The first slug went into the gray's neck. The next one went just behind the girth cinch in the horse's belly. The horse tried to run, but he staggered for a few steps before crashing to the ground and sliding several feet in the snow. Cade came out of the saddle and tumbled over and over before coming to a rest a few feet from his horse. His first reflexive action was to recover his rifle. Then, it took but one quick look to realize that Loco was finished. To spare the suffering horse further agony, Cade put a bullet in his head. It was the second time he'd had no choice but to put down a horse. This time, it seemed more difficult than it had with Billy. But there was no time to mourn the faithful horse. With no other options from which to choose, he hastily grabbed a few extra cartridges from his saddlebag, crawled back to the ravine, and rolled over the edge. Sitting there listening, he suddenly realized his throat was parched, and he wished he had taken his canteen from the saddle horn. He decided to go back for it, but as soon as his head appeared above the edge of the ravine, Plummer opened up with the rifle again.
He's getting closer. No more time to sit around.
Knowing that Snyder and the big fella that Cade had seen back at Snyder's ranch were most likely already working their way along the slope above him, he knew he had to get out of this hole. His decision made, he no longer hesitated. Running, he followed the ravine up through rocks and fir trees, intent upon positioning himself higher than the two who were coming to surprise him. As the slope steepened, he pushed on until the forest of firs began to thin out, giving way to solid rock outcroppings in a small mountain meadow. Satisfied that he was surely above Snyder and Bonner now, he dropped down behind a rock to catch his breath. As he started to relax, he waited and listened. It was not long before he heard the sound of two horses approaching softly along the ground under the trees below him. Although he could hear them, he could not see them through the dense branches. Heading for the sound, he cautiously made his way back down the mountainside. Being careful not to expose his body as little as possible, he gambled on the idea that their attention would be focused below him. Again entering the band of trees that ringed the mountain, he continued on down through the dense growth, and he stopped when he came upon the signs of scuffed-up needles where the two had led their horses. Now, with a trail to follow, he moved more quickly, but the steepness of the slope caused him to exercise caution lest he stumble and go sprawling down the mountain. Making his way around a sizable boulder, he suddenly caught sight of him. Raising his rifle to fire, he was a split second too late, for they took a turn straight down the slope. Since they were leading their horses, this put the horses between them and Cave and effectively shielded them from his line of sight. Every shot had to count, since he only had the cartridges in the magazine plus a handful of extras, so he lowered his rifle and continued his careful pursuit. Guessing that Snyder and Bonner had most likely reached the top of the ravine where he had been holed up, he tried to hurry to catch them before they realized he had deserted the spot.
He's lit out! I got his horse! He's on foot and back up behind you somewhere!
The warning was enough to cause both men to react quickly and take cover behind their horses. Straining to search the forest above him, Lem Snyder peered out from under his horse's neck, and he found nothing.
Get up here, Bob!
He and Bonner continued to scan the trees and rocks higher up the slope, while Plummer walked over to their position.
Spread out! We'll move up this slope. He can't have got far. We'll flush him out.
Some 75 feet above him, Cade waited, his rifle resting in a crevice between two rocks. For several long minutes, there was no sign of the three men stalking. Then suddenly, the branches parted below him to his right. He only got a glimpse of a shirt as the man cautiously pushed the branches aside, but it was all he needed. Cade ejected the spent cartridge and spun his rifle around, ready to shoot again. With a rifle slug in his chest, Bob Plummer lay against a tree trunk.
I'm shot!
Snyder moved quickly over toward him, darting carefully from tree to tree.
I'm shot!
Bob held his hands over the hole in his chest.
I think I'm dying.
Where is he? Jim! You see where that shot came from?
No, but I think he might be up behind that big split rock, right up from where you're standing. How bad is Bob hurt?
Snyder took another quick look at the suffering man.
Hell, he's a goner! See if you can climb up to them trees just below that rock. I'll cover you.
He pulled Plummer's rifle from the dying man's hand, ignoring the pleading eyes that stared up at him.
It'd be a whole lot easier for you to climb up there. You're right below him. He'd have an angle on me, huh? And I'm a hell of a lot bigger target than you are.
Damn it, I said I'd cover you. You ain't yellow, are you?
I ain't yellow. I ain't stupid either.
All right. We'll go up together. All right?
All right.
Pepper that rock good so he has to keep his head down. That'll give us a chance to get up in them rocks below him.
For Cade, pressed tightly against the boulder, it was like being trapped in a deadly hailstorm with bullets bouncing off the rock, ricocheting in every direction. Although there was a chill wind sweeping the rocky mountainside, he could feel the dampness of perspiration under his arms while he hugged his stone fortress, waiting for the pause in the barrage. He knew he was going to have to act quickly, anticipating his assailants' plan, for he knew they were probably on the move while they kept him pinned down. Suspecting they may have pinpointed the crevice he was using as a prop for his rifle, he rolled over to the edge of the boulder and waited. The moment he heard the pause in the firing, he came up on one knee, his rifle ready. He was in time to get a glimpse of one man, but that was all the time he needed. He sent the rifle slug slamming into Bonner's shoulder. He dropped down immediately. Snyder's bullet ricocheted sharply off the rock above his head.
Snyder, the son of a bitch shot me. I'm bleeding like hell.
Get back up here, damn it. We got him cornered now. I see where he's hiding.
I'm bleeding bad. I need a doctor.
It don't sound to me like you're hurt that bad. Where'd he get you?
In my shoulder. But it's still bleeding like hell. and it feels like there's a bullet in there the size of my fist.
Oh, shoulder? Hell, that ain't nothing. Get your ass back up here. We'll fix up your shoulder after we're done with Hunter.
Lem Snyder heard the sound of the horse taking off in the distance.
You yellow dog butter!
In a fit of anger, he rose up in an effort to spot the retreating man. And a rifle bullet tore a hole in his coat sleeve. Diving for the cover of the rock, he fumbled to return fire, but he was foiled by the lack of a target.
Damn!
Without Bonner, he was at a distinct disadvantage. Hunter held the high ground, and as deadly as he had proven to be with that Winchester, he could sit up there behind that boulder and take pot shots at him every time he made a move. The very thought of it caused his blood to boil, knowing that all he had gained with Luke Tucker's gold could be lost if Cade Hunter was allowed to escape. Yet he couldn't make a move toward him without risking his neck. He decided to take a different approach.
Hunter! Hunter, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Hunter, listen. We don't have to settle this thing with guns. Now, I know you're sore for what I've done to you and Luke. But hell, now, you might have done the same thing if you'd been me. That dust was as much mine as it was Luke's. Now, I might be willing to cut you in for a share of that gold, and nobody gets shot. What do you say? Let's talk about it.
I don't want to talk about the gold dust. I want to talk about Luke Tucker and his body shot full of holes. Tell you what, you come on out in the open and we'll talk about that.
No, I don't think I'll do that. Why don't you come out from behind that rock, and then I'll come out.
Cade pulled his revolver from his holster and laid it on the ground beside him.
Listen, I didn't want to have to shoot Luke Tucker. Hell, I always liked Luke. It was them two fellas with me that done it. That's the reason I shot them. They were about to shoot me, too, if I hadn't have been quicker than they were. I was just planning to ask you and Luke for a share. That's all I was after. But them two boys went wild. They shot you before I could stop them. Now, I'm willing to do this peaceable. To show you that I mean what I say, I'm throwing my guns out so you can see them. You throw yours out, and we'll talk about a partnership. There's still plenty of that dust to split.
He heard Snyder toss the rifle out a few yards from the rock.
Here's my handgun.
The pistol fell next to the rifle.
Now, you throw yours out so I know I can trust you.
If there was one truth in the world that Cade was sure of, it was the knowledge that Lem Snyder would lie to St. Peter if he thought he could get away with it. What Snyder couldn't know was that Cade's last extra cartridge was chambered in the Winchester.
All right, Snyder. We'll talk. Here comes my rifle.
Cade pitched it carefully a few feet from the boulder so that the barrel was pointing downhill.
I don't have a handgun.
Cade hoped Snyder wouldn't remember that he was wearing a Colt. It mattered little, though, for he was certain Snyder was not without a weapon. He knew it was risky, but he was determined to avenge Luke's death, even if it meant a contest to see which liar was quicker. He was down to 6 cartridges, and one of those was in his rifle lying out on the open ground. He could not afford to continue a long standoff.
All right, I'm coming out.
Peering through the crevice in the boulder, he saw Snyder stick out his arm and signal. Cade quickly moved to the other side of the rock, knowing Snyder's eyes would be focused on the near side. Suddenly lunging from cover, he dived on the ground, his pistol ready. But the steepness of the slope caused him to slide several yards farther than he had planned. The unexpected appearance of Cade at the far side of the boulder forced Snyder to whirl and fire quickly, his shot wide by a foot. With no time to take dead aim, Cade returned fire. Also missing, with 2 shots that hit the rock Snyder had been hiding behind. Caught out in the open, Cade scrambled back up the slopes on his hands and knees in an effort to get behind the boulder again. Snyder quickly stepped out in the open again. His bullet caught Cade in the side, causing him to collapse on the ground. Clawing for a handhold, Cade managed to pull himself behind the huge rock that had been his protection.
You're a dead man, Cade Hunter!
Snyder cocked his rifle and moved up the slope to finish the wounded man. Cade dragged himself away from the edge of the rock, his shirt already soaking with blood. He struggled to slide his back up against the tree trunk behind the boulder, aware of his life's blood draining from his side. Cocked his pistol, determined to take Snyder with him. He saw Lem Snyder come into view and stop at Cade's last position.
What the hell?
Over here, Lem.
The second slug struck Snyder just below the collarbone, spinning him around, causing him to stumble and fall backwards. In a panic to recover, Snyder scrambled to his hands and knees, clutching his rifle desperately. He was out in the open and expected Cade to appear over him at any moment, but Cade didn't come. Snyder tried to reconstruct the picture he had only seen for a split second. Hunter was propped up against a tree with a bloody stain over half his shirt.
Oh, he ain't coming after me because he can't. That was a gut shot wound.
Hunter! I got you good, didn't I?
Deciding his wound was not life-threatening, he pulled a bandana from his coat pocket and stuffed it inside his shirt, ignoring the excruciating throbbing. Determined to kill the man who had brought this trouble down upon him, he picked up his rifle again and started to edge up to the side of the rock. Then a thought struck him, and he paused to consider. In the heat of the exchange of gunfire, something had slipped by him and came to him now. After he was shot, he heard the sound of a hammer falling on an empty chamber. Hunter's gun was empty. With a new sense of urgency, he rushed back to the edge of the boulder. Not willing to throw all caution to the wind, however, he eased his head around just far enough to see with one eye. What he saw surprised him. Cade sat calmly, leaning against the tree trunk, his pistol aimed at Snyder, but he did not shoot. Gradually, Snyder eased himself away from the rock until he was standing fully exposed to the man holding a gun on him.
You're out of bullets.
Holding his rifle at his hip, he aimed directly at Cade and moved a step closer, still halfway suspecting the trap, but getting bolder. Finally, he stopped, no more than a couple of feet from the wounded man.
Oh, ain't that a shame. You plumb run out of bullets.
Maybe.
Cade pointed his pistol at Snyder's head. He jerked back abruptly and raised his rifle to shoot.
Bang.
Cade tossed the pistol aside. A triumphant smile slowly spread across Snyder's face as he fully realized the irony of the moment.
Out of cartridges. I bet you've been looking for me ever since I shot you and run off with your gold. Well, you found me. Lot of good it did you. You wound up just like old Luke.
He raised his rifle and aimed it at Cade's face.
Maybe I oughtn't finish you off too easy. You caused me one hell of a lot of trouble. Maybe I'll just pump a few more holes in you so you can die real slow. Only this time, I'm gonna wait you out to make damn sure you don't turn up again like the last time.
Kiss my ass, Snyder. I'll wait for you in hell.
Snyder lowered the rifle's front sight a little.
First one's going in your gut.
Cade heard the rifle fire, but he did not feel the bullet tearing into his abdomen. Stunned, he looked into Snyder's face, astonished by the stark expression of surprise that suddenly replaced the mocking sneer. Another shot, and Snyder dropped to his knees for a few seconds before falling face down on the rocky ground. Leading the horse, Red Reynolds appeared at the edge, a dread look of anticipation etched across his face.
Cade? Are you still alive?
I think so. But I got a hole in me that ain't supposed to be there.
The intense strain that had captured Cade's entire body suddenly left him. And realizing that he was, in fact, alive, he at last relaxed. The sudden release of tension caused Red to think Cade was dead.
Cade!
Red grabbed his friend by the shoulders.
Oh, don't die! Damn it! Elizabeth will kill me!
Oh, damn it, Red! I won't unless you're gonna shake the life out of me.
Red released him at once, then sat back on his heels.
Oh! Well, for a minute there, you looked like you was checking out. How bad are you hurt? You don't look too good.
I don't know. I took a bullet in my side. I ain't sure how bad it is. All I know for sure is that I can't move without feeling like I'm tearing out my whole insides.
Well, I'm gonna have to carry you down off of this mountain. I sure can't do nothing for you up here. If I can get you up on my horse, you think you could stay on there till I get you down to the bottom?
I reckon I'll have to.
All right, then. Let's get to it. You already look like you lost all the blood in you.
Red went back to lead his horse in closer. Passing Snyder's body, he paused to roll him over with the toe of his boot.
Looks like I came along at a pretty good time, don't it? This son of a bitch was fixing to shoot you. Why was he fixing to shoot you anyway?
It's a long story. I'll tell you about it later.
I came across another dead feller down the hill a piece. You do that too?
Yeah. How the hell did you happen to come up here? Wait, what did you mean back there when you said Elizabeth would kill you?
Well, see, that's just it.
Red dropped the reins and prepared to help Cade up.
Elizabeth came down to the corral looking for me. Said she'd heard about you taking that Jasper you shot back to John Slater's ranch. For a while there, she went on about how bad you was probably feeling about killing a man, even if it was self-defense. She lit into me like it was my fault for letting you go over there by yourself. She said if all Slater's men were like the one you shot, she was afraid you'd get into more trouble. I told her I'd offer to go with you, but you said no. That didn't really satisfy her none. She told me to climb on my horse and not to come back without you. I was damn near too late, wasn't I?
You might be yet. Let's see if we can get me on that horse.
It was a painful task, but they managed to get Cade in the saddle, although not without starting the bleeding again. It was all Cade could do to remain upright, and before they had descended halfway down the mountain, he had to fall over the horse's neck. Cade was already feeling light in his head and weaker by the moment. In an attempt to get his mind off the pain in his side, he tried to think about what Red had told him about Elizabeth. Why, he wondered, had she sought out Red to come after him? Was she really that worried about him? He tried to imagine her youthful, smiling face when she teased him, and he felt a warm tingle on his cheek where she had lightly kissed him on the first day they rode to her secret place. These were the thoughts that were drifting through his mind when they reached the bottom of the slope. Where Red caught him just as he was about to slide to the ground unconscious.
This ain't gonna work. It's too far back to Deer Lodge. You're gonna bleed to death bouncing around on that horse. I'm gonna have to go get the doctor and bring him to you. Tell me what to do, Cade.
Cade recovered his senses somewhat.
Leave me here in the ravine.
Hell no. There's no shelter here from a cold night.
Then Cade thought about Snyder's ranch.
Take me to Slater's ranch. It's only about a mile or so back that way. You can leave me there. I'll be all right. You can build up the fire and I'll be warm and dry while you go get the doctor.
Ain't he got more men there?
He didn't have before left. You'll find one of them dead between here and the ranch. One of them dead at the ranch. You saw one of them back up the hill. The other one shot. He took off. There ain't nobody left.
Where you go?
White Moon stood in the doorway of Elizabeth's room.
It's the middle of the night.
Shh!
Elizabeth tiptoed down the front hallway.
You'll wake everybody.
Where you go?
Elizabeth explained that Red Reynolds had tapped upon her window to tell her that Cade had been seriously wounded, that he was on his way to fetch Dr. Bates.
Why he wake you up to tell you that?
Elizabeth shook her head, exasperated that White Moon had to ask.
To give me time to get dressed and get my horse saddled.
White Moon seemed astonished.
Because Red knows I care about Cade.
Elizabeth didn't bother to tell White Moon that she had persuaded Red to ride after Cade. White Moon still seemed puzzled about where Elizabeth was going in the middle of the night.
I'm going to meet Red and the doctor on their way out to John Slater's ranch and join them.
White Moon was totally confused now. Elizabeth relayed Red's accounting of the shootout on the mountain.
John Slater shot him, so I'm going to help him if I can.
Not without me.
White Moon turned immediately to fetch her clothes.
Well, hurry up, and don't wake Aunt Cornelia.
Hey, Cade?
Cade opened his eyes to find Red's face inches from his. Red's eyes were wide and staring.
Whew! I thought you were dead.
I thought I was too. A couple of times. When I woke up just now and saw that ugly face of yours, I was sure I was in hell.
I'm gonna leave and let the doctor take a look at you now.
Dr. Judson Bates entered the cabin as Red left. He glanced back at the patient, then called after Red.
Tell the women to come on in here. I need somebody to build that fire up again and heat up some water.
Elizabeth was already on her way in, having waited as long as her patience would permit. White Moon was right on her heels.
Oh, Cade! White Moon, build up that fire and heat up some water. We've got to help him out of those clothes and clean him up.
White Moon nodded. Dr. Bates stepped aside to avoid being run over by the big woman. He gave Elizabeth a look of mock alarm, astonished by the young woman's taking charge of the situation.
Well, I don't know why you bothered to get me out of bed.
I just thought you might want him out of that bloody shirt.
I do. Let's get him cleaned up a little so I can see what we've got.
Even with the flurry of activity that had suddenly filled the tiny cabin, Cade was only halfway conscious of what was going on. Afterward, he remembered talking to Red and feeling the doctor's probing. But he also was aware that Elizabeth was in the room, even though he thought that unlikely. It was a little before midday when he woke up with a sense of where he actually was and discovered that Elizabeth was there indeed.
Beth, what are you doing here?
Somebody has to make sure you take care of yourself. Were you out of your mind coming out here by yourself? Red told me about John Slater. Well, I couldn't believe it. He was going to kill you.
Yeah, Red saved my bacon. But I reckon he might have spoiled your wedding plans.
Bite your tongue. I never had any such feelings for John Slater. Dr. Bates said it's a good thing you stayed put here last night instead of trying to ride back to town. He's got you all patched up, and you'll be on your feet in no time.
I reckon I can stay on the horse long enough to get back to the bar K now.
Bates cocked his head toward his patient when he heard Cade's remark.
You don't need to ride anywhere for a day or two. You were mighty lucky, young man. That bullet didn't damage any major organs, but it only missed by a hair. You're gonna have to be laid up for a spell until some healing starts.
I can't stay here.
Oh, yes, you can. We're gonna stay with you, White Moon and me. We're gonna clean this place up, and Red's gonna butcher a cow. Dr. Bates says you need fresh meat to build your blood back up.
Yeah, I'm gonna go cut one of Slater's herd and butcher it. I ain't seen more than half dozen cows around here. Ain't much of a cattle empire.
He took a few steps toward the door, then stopped and turned to face Cade again.
I still can't figure why that man wanted you dead so bad. You sure you ain't stepped on his toes somewhere before and you just forgot about it?
Oh, I've seen him before, and I sure as hell never forgot about it.
Cade told him about Luke's gold and how Lem Snyder had murdered Luke Tucker.
I guess he recognized me all along. He looked at me kind of funny on the morning we left Butte for Deer Lodge, like he'd seen a ghost. I just didn't recognize him.
Listening with eyes open wide, Elizabeth was horrified to learn of John Slater's murderous past. She couldn't help but quiver suddenly when she thought about his quest for her affections. She glanced over at White Moon to see her smug expression.
I told you, no damn good.
Cade couldn't really say he liked the idea of remaining in Lem Snyder's cabin at first. There was still a loathing for spending any length of time in any dwelling that Lem Snyder had called home. But he soon softened his feelings of resentment after White Moon and Elizabeth burned Snyder's personal items and scoured the cabin. Red killed one of Snyder's cows, but left the butchering to White Moon while he escorted the doctor back to Deer Lodge. He promised Elizabeth that he would also reassure the Kramers that she was all right. She had left him a note the night before, but she was afraid they would be worried until they heard more from her. When Dr. Bates and Red had departed for town, White Moon put some beef over the fire to roast. The aroma wafting from the roasting meat reminded Cade that he had not eaten for some time, and he was thankful that Snyder's bullet had not pierced any internal organs. The day passed peacefully enough with only one minor confrontation between patient and nurse. An argument over whether Cade was going to struggle to get out of bed to answer nature's call or use the bucket White Moon found in the barn.
Don't be silly. Dr. Bates said you were to stay in bed for at least a couple of days. Besides, you act like you've got something nobody's ever seen before.
Maybe so, but I ain't ready for you to see it.
A compromise was reached, with the two women agreeing to leave the cabin while Cade used the bucket.
Well, that's not fair. The ladies have to go outside and freeze our behinds when we get nature's call, while you get to go inside where it's warm.
By nightfall, Cade was tired and more than ready to sleep. Elizabeth checked the bandage around his torso as Dr. Bates had instructed, then tenderly tucked the blanket around him. Feeling his eyes searching her face as she tended him, she met his gaze and smiled.
I don't know how your daddy would feel about this. I reckon maybe with White Moon here to look after you, he wouldn't get too upset.
She didn't answer at once, continuing to smile down at him. Then she glanced over to see that White Moon was tending something on the fire, and leaning close, she kissed him lightly on the lips.
It wouldn't matter if he did, would it? You're gonna see a lot more of me, Cade Hunter. Now close your eyes and go to sleep.
She left him then to lie awake, wondering what her remark really meant. Was there a promise implied, or was it just wishful thinking on his part? When he finally drifted off, his dreams were filled with visions of Elizabeth and the grassy plains between Big Timber and the Crazy Mountains, and Luke Tucker, Levi Crabtree, and Willow. Cade awoke the next morning feeling stronger and hungry. When he arrived in the kitchen section of the cabin, he saw White Moon and Elizabeth removing some stones from the hearth. He walked the rest of the way over to them, and to his surprise, he saw that they had uncovered a secret hiding place. When he looked inside it, he finally saw what had piqued their interest. 8 leather pouches, each one filled with gold dust. Speechless, Elizabeth turned to Cade. It was surprising to Cade that Snyder still had 8 of the original pouches.
Luke's gold. So that's what's left. There were 16 to start with.
Maybe half of it's gone, but it still looks like enough for a man to plan his life and maybe start a family.
I reckon if a man could find a woman who would have him.
I swear, Cade Hunter, you might be the dumbest man I ever met.
I reckon.
You hurry up and get yourself well. I can see you've got a lot to learn about calling on a lady.
Yes, ma'am. But I can learn pretty fast when I set my mind to it.
Luke's Gold is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, Charles G. West. Published by arrangement with NAL Signet, a member of Penguin Group USA Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Evan Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Tim Pabon, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, Stephen Carpenter, Joe Brack, Johann Detweiler, Eric Mesner, Ren Casey, Terrence Aselford, Thomas Keegan, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Jeff Allen, Christopher Sheeran, Danny Gavigan, and Gary Tells. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas. Additional music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed Luke's Gold, be sure to listen to the Dead or Alive trilogy and Charles G. West's Duel at Lohawk, Range War in Whiskey Hill, and Tanner's Law. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
I give a damn that you're my father.
The thought never crossed my mind.
I don't know you, and I don't want to know you. All you ever gave me was a rep to live up to. I done it too. Maybe I haven't killed as many men as the famous Frank Morgan, but my day's coming, old man. My day's coming.
Frank Morgan gun down his own flesh and blood? Find out in The Last Gunfighter number 23, Montana Gundown. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.